Today's episode is brought to you by Canva. We're all looking for ways to make an impact at work, but not all of us are skilled in visual design. Canva helps you get your point across, simply and beautifully. It's easy to design Canva presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos. You start with a designer-made template and customize it with your content. Plus, add graphics, charts, and more from Canva's massive media library. Whatever department you work in, Canva is perfect for any task. Sales decks, hiring docs, marketing brainstorms, employee videos, you name it. Anyone at work can design with Canva. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on Season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Welcome to Brainstuff, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, Brainstuff, Lauren Vogelbaum here. From poetry and prose to music, painting, and sculpture, the cultural movement known as the Harlem Renaissance produced an unprecedented array of art and social change in the United States. The end of the Civil War in 1865 ushered in the emancipation of hundreds of thousands of Black Americans who had been enslaved in the South. And by 1920, about 300,000 of them had moved north in search of economic, social, and political freedoms. This is known as the Great Migration, and it was also a time of general urbanization. Northern cities like St. Louis, Chicago, and Cleveland saw many new citizens. But Harlem in particular, a 3-square-mile or 777-hectare neighborhood in New York's northern Manhattan, became a destination for around 175,000 Black Americans seeking a fresh start. It offered them lower real estate and rental prices than many other locations. But Harlem was a significant city for a number of reasons as Black Americans began reestablishing and redefining what it meant to be Black in a post-slavery world. We spoke with William J. Maxwell, professor of English and African and African American Studies at Washington University in St. Louis. He said, "To think about it in a concrete and practical way, New York was where the existing artistic infrastructure was. The big publishing companies were now in New York and no longer in Boston. Modern art was centered in New York, and Harlem was becoming an attractive destination for Black artists. Harlem was also so important because it was the most international Black city in the United States. That's the place Caribbean migrants came, and you had people from Barbados and Haiti pouring in. Jamaicans like political activist Marcus Garvey and the poet Claude McKay were deeply involved in the movement and were coming to New York, along with a lot of Africans. Outside of Africa or Paris, New York was probably the most international Black city in the world at that point." While changes were flourishing in other parts of the country as well, The movement, an explosion of literary, artistic, intellectual, and social change among Black Americans, quickly became known as the Harlem Renaissance. Maxwell said, it was a self-conscious movement in the sense that the people who organized it knew they were holding a renaissance. It was called different things at the time, but it wasn't the kind of aesthetic or cultural event that was only labeled from a distance of years. It was labeled at the time it was actually happening. While many view the Harlem Renaissance as a primarily literary movement that included the birth of works from leading poet and author Langston Hughes, the golden era that lasted from approximately the 19-teens through the mid-30s also saw the proliferation of visual arts, music, theater, and more. But at its core, the Harlem Renaissance was more than an artistic movement. It was an age dedicated to reclaiming and redefining Blackness in a new way. Maxwell explained, a renaissance is about the idea of rebirth. There are examples like with the Italian Renaissance. The Harlem Renaissance had a similar idea in the rebirth of African culture as it was before slavery. But it was also about reinventing a connection all over the Black world for cultural possibility and power. What's paradoxical about the Harlem Renaissance is that Black artists were defining what it meant to be a modern Black people. In other words, for Black people to be urban or to have found various forms of economic freedom, which is one reason it was centered in New York. After the Great Migration, there was a revival of African culture as it was before slavery, but the more important piece was defining what it meant to be a Black American in relation to modernity. According to Maxwell, the significance of the Harlem Renaissance extended beyond the arts and permeated culture as a whole. He said, there were a lot of different styles, and all these people were trying to redefine Blackness as modern. One of the basic elements of 19th and 20th century racism was the idea that Black people were primitive or behind the curve of history. The Harlem Renaissance really pushed against that and suggested that Black people may be the most modern people who have the capacity for change. One crucial way Black Americans pushed back against historic racism was to effectively transform the country's musical landscape. While jazz music had roots in southern towns and cities like New Orleans and Memphis, and was also developed in cities like Chicago, it found fame on the East Coast. Maxwell explained, classical 1920s jazz wasn't invented in New York City, but that's where jazz music first became marketable and a national commodity. Artists like Bessie Smith and Duke Ellington weren't from New York, but they played clubs there and established an audience there. New York is where early jazz joined the national entertainment industries. According to Maxwell, it's thanks to New York that the jazz imported from elsewhere began to be played on the radio and in movie theaters. However, a specific style of jazz did originate there. He said, some jazz did get invented in New York, a specific style called stride piano from artists like Fats Waller and James P. Johnson, who wrote the music for the Charleston. Those guys showed the power of New York City as an entertainment capital in that they became professional songwriters in Tin Pan Alley. While the Harlem Renaissance continues to be celebrated for the contributions of renowned figures like dancer Josephine Baker and artist Aaron Douglas, there's still a lot to be discovered and learned from the era. Unpublished novels by authors like Claude McKay, for example. Maxwell said, there was a great variety of work created during the Harlem Renaissance that we don't understand yet. But people know the works of Langston Hughes, the great poet who produced classical poetry soaked in Black folklore and speech styles, and Zora Neale Hurston, one of the great storytellers and anthropologists, who's also known for bringing Black oral forms into prose. But beyond that, there's a lot of other work, like that from a young novelist named Rudolph Fisher, who was also a serious physician and wrote witty novels, like Walls of Jericho. Also, there were young poets like Helene Johnson, who wrote witty, almost Dorothy Parker-like pieces. The Harlem Renaissance effectively ended in the 1930s after the economic effects of the Great Depression set in, causing businesses, nightclubs, and publishing houses to shutter, and writers and artists to scatter in search of employment. Although the historic period of the Harlem Renaissance hit its height a century ago, its influence has continuously impacted American culture through the decades, from its effect on the civil rights movement of the 1960s to its lasting legacy in modern arts and culture. Carrie D. Wintz, a distinguished professor of history at Texas Southern University, put it this way in 2015. The Harlem Renaissance was the first time that a considerable number of mainstream publishers and critics took African-American literature seriously.
and it was the first time that African-American literature and the arts attracted significant attention from the nation at large. Today's episode was written by Michelle Konstantinovsky and produced by Tyler Klang. For more on this and lots of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Brainstuff is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.